all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web. VeteransRadio.org is our new URL, VeteransRadio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to VeteransRadio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at LegalHelpForVeterans.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Travis Harmon, Staff Sergeant in the Army National Guard. Wrote an interesting story, a remote outpost fighting with the U.S. Army in Afghanistan. But it's more than just his story. It's also a bit of his father's story. Travis, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, this is a bit of an unusual story on a number of fronts. You weren't the prototypical recruit the Army was looking for. I think you're a self-described young skater punk at the time. So yep. Tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up in Pennsylvania, and this decision about joining the Army.
Okay. I grew up in central Pennsylvania around Lanesport, known for the Little League World Series. So there's a lot of farming communities around Lanesport, and I grew up from one in Hughesville. Basically, 9/11 happened. My father had joined in the 80s and got out when I was born. So I always had a family tradition of military service. My grandfather was in, a few of my uncles were in, my older brother joined the Air Force when I was around 10. So I had a lot of family influence in joining. And once 9/11 happened, I was only in eighth grade, but I hoped that one day I would be able to go and fight. And well, my dream came true.
Well, it was not only yours, but talk to us about your relationship with your father, Dean, and how sort of all those family influences led you to say, hey, I'm going to enlist.
Right. So my father joined the Marines in the 80s. And like I said, he ETS'd out after I was born. He joined the Army, the PA Army National Guard in the early 90s while I was a little kid. So I grew up seeing this military service, and we would watch war movies together, and that, you know, made it even more exciting for me. So as time grew on, I kind of lost interest in it, but my dad would talk to me at random about it. Then once 9/11 happened, he enlisted in the PA National Guard again. And, you know, I saw that as my opportunity to kind of, we never had a really close relationship while I was growing up, so that was kind of my way of earning his acceptance by enlisting with him.
And you then enlisted in the Pennsylvania Army National Guard.
Correct.
It's kind of, that's a whole different process after 9/11. People who are familiar with the Guard pre-9/11, you know, it's a different training tempo. It's a different op tempo. As you got in, This wasn't the National Guard that your dad was in the 90s. Did he talk to you about, hey, this is a whole different op tempo here?
Right. Yeah, so I initially wanted to go active duty Army, and he talked to me and was like, you know, maybe you should go PA Guard for a little bit. It's 1 week in a month, 2 weeks in the summer. If you like it, you could go active duty. If you don't, then you're stuck with your 1 week in a month, 2 weeks in the summer. But like you said, the op tempo was completely different. My unit had not they had deployed to Germany in, I believe it was 04, and then the PA Army Guard 2nd Brigade deployed to Ramadi, Iraq in 06, and my father went with them, and a lot of the guys from my unit went with them as well. So they got back, and while I was in basic training and advanced training, and once I got home, within a week's time, I got orders to go to Afghanistan.
So you did some of your training at Fort Benning and Fort Gordon in Georgia. A whole lot different than Hughesville, Pennsylvania, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Prior to that, I'd never flown. I'd only left the state once to go to New Jersey to the beach. So it was definitely an experience for me.
And was this, did you feel it, like this is part of what my dad wanted me to experience, maybe wanted me to grow up a bit? Because I'm sure everybody who goes in goes through this and goes, I'm not the same kid I was a year ago.
Right. Yeah, so like any son and father, he was trying to give me advice, you know, pull your head out of your butt.
We've all gotten that one, or given it, yeah.
Yeah, so once I did that, he talked to me about joining, and I decided it was probably for the best because I had no, you know, aspirations or anything I wanted to do. So yeah, he talked me into it, and then at the time, Band of Brothers had come out on HBO, and my grandfather fought in World War II, so I was very interested in that. And I watched that, and that was kind of my deciding factor of joining. I said, I want to have a band of brothers like that. I want to go into combat. I want to serve my country.
Well, as you say, you go through your training, and then, like a week later, you get orders to go to Afghanistan. How did that impact you, the family, your dad, Dean?
So my parents had divorced when I was 10. But as far as my grandmother, his mother, and that side of the family, they were very worried for both of us. They were happy that he was going with me because he also received orders to deploy. We were in the same battalion. He was in Alpha Company. I was in the headquarters element of the 103rd Armor. And yeah, so the family was worried, but at the same time, my mom came to me and said, I'm glad he's going with you.
It's really an unusual situation where one deploys, even with a family member, a brother, a sister, a mother or a father, really unusual. Did you know anybody else who's doing that type of deployment?
Not so much parent-child relationships, but brother, 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 sister, 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 you know, relationships, sibling relationships. That was more common. I think we came across one other father-son duo that was over there the same time we were.
So this is, 2009 when you're in Afghanistan?
2008.
Tell us about the conditions of fighting in Afghanistan at that point.
So when I first got there, it wasn't too bad. Things were pretty light as far as attacks. Once the old unit ripped out of the outpost we were on, it progressively got worse and worse. The month of April, we were hit pretty much every day, whether it be mortars, attacks, you know, IEDs, what have you. Yeah, so, and the interesting part was my father was stationed at Bagram, and he could go into the talk and see what was going on at my outpost while I was getting attacked, what was happening at the time.
So let's expand on that. In the title of the book is Remote Outpost: Fighting with the U.S. Army in Afghanistan, and we're talking to Travis Harmon. Travis, explain to us the outpost you were at and give our veteran radio listeners a little bit of insight of what that was about.
Okay, so the outpost was called Combat Outpost Nigel, and it was in the, I believe it was at the top of the Alashang Valley. It was either the top or the bottom, where the Alashang and Alangar valleys met. We were put there to kind of stop Taliban traffic coming back and forth through Meterlam, which FOB Meterlam was our main base that we operate out of, but 90% of the time we were at the outpost. Generally, we would see combat while deployed on the outpost, not so much outside the wire. It started to become pretty heavy where we would get fire outside the wire, but the majority of it was they were trying to overrun us.
And talk about, again, there are a lot of people who are listening, Travis, who don't understand what these outposts were in Afghanistan. This is not a big formal base. There's not a lot of people in it. Give us some sense of the size and the protection that is available in these remote outposts.
Okay, so we had one guard tower initially, and it was called Punisher Base or Punisher Tower, and it oversaw a village that sat right across the road from us. There was a road and then a little bit of a creek, and across that was the village. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. But yeah, so the outpost itself was encircled with three rows of Constantine wire and then claymore mines and trip flares. There were some HESCO barriers that, the barriers filled with rocks and dirt to try and stop bullets and shrapnel, but we had very limited sources up on the outpost. In terms of manpower, we had a platoon of about 20 guys ourselves, and then the Afghan army had about 20 soldiers as well.
During this time, when you're in this rotation, that platoon is made up of all Pennsylvania National Guard members.
Yes. Now, the unique part about our platoon, we were an infantry platoon. I joined as a radio operator, and I was assigned to this infantry platoon as their RTO. But the unique thing about our platoon was it was a thrown together platoon. So we were infantry on paper, but realistically, our jobs were, we had cooks, we had mechanics, we had artillery guys, and a handful of infantry guys, but the majority of us were from different, occupational specialties.
And that's was fairly common, I think, as the war wore on, and they kept kind of having to put units together to man up, and so these weren't guys that you necessarily drilled with on a regular basis.
Right. I would say only about two of them were from my actual unit that I drilled with. The rest were from throughout the state.
So now you find yourself in Afghanistan at this remote outpost. What's going on through your mind between that image that you had prior to joining up and the reality that you're now facing?
It didn't really hit me until about the first weekend, and I was at the main base of FOB Meterlam, and I saw medevac helicopters landing, and they were pulling body bags off of Afghan troops, and they were refueling, rearming the Kiowas that were coming in, the Blackhawks, and that's when it really sunk in that this is real. This isn't some movie that I've watched growing up. Like, I need to keep my stuff together. I need to keep my head on a swivel. Once the first time outside the wire, I thought I was going to be dead within seconds because I was just not ready for what was to come.
Well, and I think that's the point at which fear, questioning, do I have the stuff to do what needs to be done for my buddies? All that's playing hard on you, isn't it?
Right, yeah. So it's a lot of stress, obviously. You don't want to let your team down. You want to make it home yourself. You want to make sure your buddies make it home with you. And you want to accomplish your mission at the same time. And, you know, as it went on, I kind of just wrote myself off as dead already. And that took away a lot of the fear for me.
Just mentally saying, hey, this is going to happen, so quit worrying about it?
Exactly, yes.
And the horrific realities of warfare did come to this outpost. Tell us about that.
The warfare at the outpost?
Yes.
So it was pretty, like I said, in the beginning, it wasn't so bad. A couple pop shots here and there, maybe an RPG fired at us. But as time passed, it became, we would have to start flying up to the outpost versus taking Humvees because the IEDs were so thick. And there's so many of them planted along our route. We only had about one or two routes we could take by Humvee to get there. So they began to fly us in. Well, when they began to fly us in, they'd be waiting for it to land on the helipad, and they would start shooting at the helicopter. I came back from PASS in Qatar in the beginning of July, and our helicopter couldn't land on the outpost because it was taking fire and the outpost was taking fire. So we had to circle around a couple times, you know, and we did a combat landing and got off just in time to get attacked again.
Tell us a little bit about some of the injuries and casualties associated with the 20 guys and the Afghan troops up there at Outpost Najil.
So we had one of our soldiers, the PA Guard soldiers, take some shrapnel from a Chinese rocket, came in and hit the entry control point that he was manning. Because at this point, we had built up a couple other towers to, you know, basically secure the outpost a little better, because it was getting to the point where they were getting pretty close to getting inside the wire. So we decided to push back the perimeter, and in doing so, they started, you know, figuring us out even more. And, you know, it seemed like we had somebody, one of the Terps, or not one of the Terps, but one of the Afghan workers on the post or on the outpost, was, you know, an insider working for the Taliban. But in terms of other casualties, usually the Afghan soldiers took the brunt of it, it seemed. You know, there were multiple casualties there. Some killed, some wounded, you know, shot through the legs, shot other places. It was just, they seemed to be bullet magnets in my eyes.
Well, they certainly probably were, from the Taliban's viewpoint, too, that those were the traitors, if you will.
Yes.
As the radio operator at the outpost, again, give the civilian listening here some understanding of what you're doing during these attacks and what the role for the radio operator is.
So if we were on the outpost and we would be attacked, it was my job. I was also a UAV operator, a drone operator, a handheld drone. And it was my job when we started getting attacked to set this drone up, get it in the air to see where the Taliban is. So that was one of my duties as the operator, the radio operator. But generally on a daily basis, I would have to go around and check every radio in the morning, check all the radios before patrol, make sure they had the right, you know, frequencies and whatnot. They're encrypted the right way. And then I would go out on patrol with everyone and take my, you know, my radio with the giant antenna that you see in like the Vietnam movies. And that's what that reminded me of a lot, was Vietnam. Like, obviously I'm too young to have fought in Vietnam, but the landscape and just the patrols on foot reminded me a lot of movies I watched as a kid.
When you're over in Afghanistan, how old are you?
When I'm there, I'm 20.
And how old is your dad about?
He is, at that time, he would be 40.
And he had a different job. You mentioned he was back at Bagram. The whole time you're up at the outpost, is he down at Bagram?
Yeah, so he was the unit movement officer for the battalion. He was the NCO in charge, not the actual officer. But he was in charge of all the helicopter routes for our battalion and our supply movements and troop movements. So, you know, I used to joke with him and say, you have a cushy desk job, because he had a desk and he was in a building with air conditioning, and there I was sleeping in a tent with 10 other guys on the side of a mountain. So.
Remember, you're 20 years younger too. So So let me ask this. Part of your getting involved here was to demonstrate something to your dad, or to create a different relationship with your dad. How did this experience over in Afghanistan, that you both experienced in a different way, ultimately impact the relationship?
If anything, it brought us closer together. Not only were we father and son in a closer relationship, but we were now brothers, that band of brotherhood that I wanted. And I never thought I would find it with my father, but it turned out that I did. And even when we came home, we would swap war stories. And, you know, he was in Iraq, and prior to Afghanistan, I would ask him, how did it compare to my deployment versus your deployment to combat, and, you know, different scenarios that we had been in. And, so it actually brought us really close.
I asked this of a lot of guys, you know, as you know, the military, Travis, is having a hell of a recruiting problem, right? Every branch is. But your dad would have encouraged you to join up and participate, and some of that's family history, some of it's his own experience from being in the Marines. As you reflect back, and when it's time for you to have a son or a daughter, a niece or a nephew come ask Uncle Trav, hey, I'm thinking of joining up. What do you think about that? What's your view on it now?
My thoughts now are, my first thought would be no, please don't. But then that would retract. And, you know, it's a great career if you make it one. You get out of it what you put into it. There are great benefits, you know. It's hard to navigate the VA afterwards, but, you know, once you figure it out or find somebody that can figure it out for you, you know, all the benefits are there for you. It's great in that aspect. What I would say as a word of advice is, be careful what job you pick, or know the job you're going into.
And, you know, I think that's good advice for anything in life, right? Do a little more study, do a little more due diligence, look into things, you know, see what might be useful. If you only spend 2 or 4 or 6 years in, what might be useful afterwards, right? I think that's right. What you're kind of saying.
Yeah, so in my entire 13 years in the PA Guard, I did 4 different jobs. I was a radio operator, a signal support NCO, a infantryman, and a supply sergeant when I medically retired in 2018. You know, I hated being a supply sergeant, and I loved being an RTO and an infantryman. So, I mean, it's a hard life, and it's hard on your body and your mind, but it's very rewarding.
Well, and you developed that band of brothers that you were looking for. You probably still have a bunch of guys who you're connected with that shared your experiences in a way that nobody else can really relate, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, they're my family, everyone I served with. And like I said, even though my father was on the outpost with me, I still consider him a brother in a sense. And, you know, we have a bond that I feel can never be broken.
Well, we're talking to Travis Harmon. He wrote Remote Outposts, Fighting with the U.S. Army in Afghanistan. It's published by Casemate. Travis, if people want to read the book and learn more, how do they do that?
So there's several ways. You can go to my website, www.travisharmon.com. It's spelled H-A-R-M-A-N. Or you can go to Casemate Publishers and Google or search Remote Outpost. You can just Google my name. You can Google Remote Outpost Travis Harmon. It'll pop up. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's available pretty much everywhere.
Well, we really appreciate not only your service, but taking some time to spend with us here on Veterans Radio today. Travis, really a great job, and we're glad that we got a chance to speak.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org.
And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We would again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Press Corps Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.